Good evening. My name is Brittany, and I'm going to be your moderator. I'm here with State Senator Vincent Hughes, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Hughes or any of our wonderful guests this evening, press star 3 at any time. Now let's welcome Senator Vincent Hughes.
Thanks, Brittany, and thanks to everybody in the district for participating on tonight's call. As Brittany indicated, I'm Senator Vincent Hughes, and I'm holding this live telephone town hall where we'll be discussing COVID-19, the continued need to deal with the issues around testing and getting tested and maintaining social distancing and wearing your mask. And we also want to begin what will be regular conversations around the vaccine. As the vaccine starts to get distributed all across our community, starting with our essential frontline healthcare workers first and then to broader groups, we want to make sure that we're available to answer any questions that folks may have and try to get good information out to people so that they can utilize it to deal with the issues with their own household, their neighborhood, their community. As we always do, we try to make sure that we bring trusted messengers delivering trusted messages. And for that, I can't think of maybe three individuals better positioned, and maybe one other person. His name would be Fauci, but these three are pretty good to really help us through this conversation this evening. Dr. Caroline Johnson, who's the Deputy Health Commissioner for the City of Philadelphia, the Chair of the Montgomery County Board of Commissioners, Dr. Val Arkush, and Dr. Priscilla Posse, who is with Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, is in one of the leadership positions, I believe the vice president of the National Medical Association, which are all of the black doctors all over the United States of America. And Dr. Posse has been with us on our telephone town halls before, as is Dr. Arkush and Dr. Johnson. So we've got some good people here, again, trusted messengers, delivering trusted messages, providing good answers and solid information in the context of making sure that we clear up all of confusion that's out there and we get out, as I said, good information to all of you. And quite frankly, these three together, I think they could give Dr. Fauci a run for his money. Because they're that kind of committed individuals that really, really, really are committed to the issue. If you'd like to ask a question, press star 3 on your phone. If you'd like to ask a question, press star 3 on your phone, and then we'll get your question listed in the queue. As you know, we usually have lots of participants on our telephone town halls, and we don't necessarily get a chance to get to every question that's raised. But we do make sure we record them, those questions, and that we try to get to folks through the way email and telephone after the telephone town hall in the next several days. So without any further ado, we're going to get started. I'm going to ask our three very special guests if they could just say hello for 2 minutes, and then we'll begin the process of answering questions. We'll start off with the Deputy Commissioner for the Health Commissioner for the City of Philadelphia, Dr. Caroline Johnson. Doc?
Thank you, Senator Hughes. I'm really happy to be here tonight on this town hall. And, I'll just kind of open, I think, by talking a little bit about vaccine and about the excitement about having vaccine. You know, in our world, I guess we've been fighting this pandemic for months and months and not necessarily winning all the time. So having the vaccine added as a tool for us to fight the pandemic and to successfully fight it is really exciting. And I would say that I have heard from my healthcare compadres in all the hospitals and large practices that they're really enthusiastic about this. So most of the work that we're focusing on now has to do with creating a fair and timely and equitable distribution of this vaccine across the city, and we are staying as closely aligned with federal policies and guidelines that have been issued for us, although there will be some modifications to that so that we meet the needs of our own population. But again, it's a really exciting time. I'm also, you know, I think we're like 6 days in now to using the vaccine. So I've been working in a vaccine clinic myself so I could have some hands-on experience with this. And, you know, I feel very comfortable with using the vaccine. I feel very comfortable with the safety and efficacy of this vaccine. So I'm really encouraged by where we're going. Now, having said that, there's no question that there's a slowness in the arrival of the product. We've gotten very low numbers of doses. Looks like we're going to continue to get fairly small numbers of doses for the next coming weeks, but it won't be long till it opens up, and I can't give you a date when, but it will. Sometime in the new year, early in the new year, there will be increasing numbers of doses, and we'll get vaccine to all of the populations who need it. But again, I think this is all good news so far that we have this vaccine. It seems to be safe and effective. It seems like all of our preparations to get it distributed to our Tier 1A healthcare workers, and we're just starting in long-term care for residents and staff, is also just kicking off. So I'm really enthusiastic, and I think we're going to have a success, although it's going to take some time to get there. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Johnson. Appreciate that. Good information. Dr. Val, and I can't just call you by doc, right? You know, got to mention, because I got three of them on the line. So got to mention the whole name, Dr. Valerie Arcush from Montgomery County, head of the Montgomery County Commissioners.
Well, thanks, Senator, and good evening, everybody. It's great to have a chance to talk with all of you tonight. So as the senator said, I'm an elected official in Montgomery County, but I'm also a physician, and I practiced medicine for about a little over 20 years. And I, too, share the excitement of my colleagues on this call. We've been doing a lot of blocking and tackling for the last 40-some weeks as we fought this virus. Everything that we've been able to do has been reactive, like wearing masks and social distancing, and those are extremely important things. But now we're finally going to be able to go on the offense. And with this vaccine, we will be able to, with a very, very high degree of success, prevent people from getting COVID-19. And one of the things that I'm very excited about with the vaccine is that it seems to be 95% effective. And for those few handful of people that still do get a case of COVID-19, it's a mild case. So far, it's been 100% effective in keeping people from having a case of COVID-19 that would require they have to go into the hospital. So that right there is just a big step forward as we look around and see all of our hospitals in southeastern Pennsylvania, you know, very, very full right now with patients with COVID-19. So I'm really excited to hear what's on the minds of everyone who's on this call. I think it's very important. All of us should ask questions about anything that's going to be put into our bodies. And I hope that after this call tonight, that people feel reassured and enthusiastic about getting the vaccine when it's their turn.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Arcush. Appreciate that. Dr. Posse from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Talk to us, Dr. Posse, Priscilla Posse.
Great. Good evening, Senator. Thank you to my colleagues that are joining me on the panel. Good evening, those that are listening. So as the Senator introduced, I am a pediatrician, and as many of you may know, pediatricians are very well-versed in vaccines. Oftentimes, we are immunizing our children against what we call childhood diseases because of the vaccines, we have not seen those spreads over the age spectrum. So, you know, it's great for me to educate both parents and children on the importance of vaccines, why vaccines work. And I think what's unique with COVID-19, right, is that this is now we are vaccinating our adults first. So I applaud all of you for taking the time to educate yourself, to understand the importance of this vaccine, and always remembering, right, the three whys of a vaccine. So one, right, it can minimize symptoms if you come into contact or get infected with the vaccine, as the last panelist said. It can decrease the spread of the virus, which is what we are obviously working towards. And then if you're, then the vaccine can also boost your immune system to the point that if you come in contact, you may not actually become infected. So it can prevent infection in that way. So the vaccine is so great in terms of protecting our health and making sure that we are well. And as we try to move towards, you know, more integration, the vaccine will be really important to that. I will also say, I will echo that I am very confident in the studies and the work that has been done with the vaccine. And then as the senator also mentioned, being an officer of the National Medical Association that represents all of our Black physicians in the country, we've been in close communication with Dr. Tismika Corbett, who's an African-American woman that was the lead of designing and implementing this vaccine. So we are very confident in the vaccine, and we are very assured that it will be safe and healthy and allow us to get back to what we will see as a new normal as the vaccine is distributed to the public. So I'm happy to answer questions this evening and continue this dialogue. Thank you.
Great. Dr. Passi, thank you. Thank you very much. Brittany, let's get it going. I can see the list, and we've got a lot of callers with questions. Why don't we get started? And remember, if you have a question, press *3, and we'll get you in the queue. Brittany?
All right, let's get to these callers. First, we have Ann in West Philadelphia.
Yes, this question is for Senator Hughes. Is there a fee for this vaccine?
No.
Okay,
the vaccine is free.
Okay, that's it.
Okay.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Ann. Take care of yourself. Wear your mask. Take care.
Well, that was an easy one. On to our next caller. Cecilia is calling us from West Philadelphia.
Hello.
Hey, Cecilia. How are you?
Fine, thank you, Senator. Doing
very
a great
good.
Job.
Thank you very much.
My question is, I know the workers and everybody and those types of individuals, and rightly so, have to get the vaccine, but I'm over 55. I got a whole bunch of stuff that I take a lot of medicines for. When would I be able to get the vaccine? And because my son has direct support workers because of his autism, Would there be exception for him to get the virus so I'm protected from him, he's protected from the workers? How would that go?
And do
my question.
Great. Do you all live in the same household, you and your son?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm his caregiver.
Okay. All right. I got you. Dr. Johnson, you have any advice for Cecilia?
I do have some advice. First, I just want to mention that the current vaccines are not authorized under the FDA's current emergency use authorization to give to anyone under the age of 16 years. So I don't know how old your son is, and you don't need to tell me, but this is not a pediatric vaccine at the present time, so we do have an age cutoff. We can only give it to people 16 and over right now. I would expect that's going to change at some point in the future. The second point I'll make is about your own personal eligibility. And over the weekend, the CDC issued some new guidelines that have, elevated persons with certain underlying medical conditions into phase one or the higher tiers. And so my expectation is that you will be eligible for vaccine based on underlying medical conditions sometime in the near future. I'm fuzzy about that because it's so dependent on the supply that's coming in. We do have a commitment to get to all our healthcare workers as a priority, the ones that are seeing the public and exposed and have a risk of transmitting it to others, they're the current priority. And there will be some other essential workers who have no ability to protect themselves by staying home, so they're going to be our next priority. But then we're going to see individuals who have underlying diseases on the list. I would hope that we're talking maybe February. That's a really rough estimate of when we think we might be expanding out to other groups. So probably by March, you'll see some of this happening. Now, one of the complex things that we haven't worked out yet is how we're going to notify you when you're available, when you're able to go in and get vaccine, since we don't have list of everyone in the city who would be eligible. So we're going to have to be working with the private providers and the clinics and insurance companies to try to identify all the eligible people and contact them about their availability. So we're going to work on how we can do that. But you will be eligible. You will be eligible in phase one, and we will get to you as soon as we can.
Great. Great.
This is Val. Can I just add one quick thing to that?
Sure.
The home health aides are also in the kind of this 1B category. So it's possible that the home health aide that actually comes to assist with your son might be able to get vaccinated even before you. So, again, that's all sort of part of this puzzle to try to wrap people around in as much safety as possible.
Great. Great, great. Thanks, Val. Thank you very much. Brittany?
All right, next let's go to Iva from West Philly.
Okay.
Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for this platform. I have three questions. The first one is it mandatory for those on the front line to be vaccinated? And also those who are asymptomatic, but because of maybe their relation to someone who was positive, then therefore they became positive. How would an asymptomatic person know that they are not in a contagious state, that others might be contaminated with the disease and the infection, I'm sorry. And what is the likelihood if there's information on being infected again with the virus? Thank you.
Let's try Dr. Posse with this one. Dr. Posse?
Yes. Those are really great questions. I am going to actually start with the last question, which is if someone has already been positive, has experienced the illness of COVID-19, what is the likelihood that they will get it again? There have been studies. The studies are still in progress. They have shown that most people to date have not been reinfected. If they've been exposed, there's a small subset that has after 6 months. So just to go back and explain why is that when our body gets exposed to a virus, we build up these defense cells called antibodies, and they help us fight over time when we get reexposed. The virus is so new that they're still studies with that. And that's why the vaccine actually is so important, right? So even if you have had COVID-19, we're going to encourage you to get the vaccine again. Why? So that can prevent reinfection, but also so you're not spreading it to other people. And then as more people in the community take the vaccine, we'll be able to actually then evaluate and study what is the likelihood of becoming reinfected. So that's a great question. And that's why the vaccine is so, so, so important, because it's always going to minimize and decrease the opportunity to get reinfected. Then to the second question was about persons that are asymptomatic, right? And that I think is where we are, right? And why we're at a point where, you know, Pennsylvania's had to have some increased restrictions is because we're seeing the spread. And sometimes that spread is coming from those who are asymptomatic, where they're positive but not showing symptoms, but they can be in contact with someone and then pass it on to them. And so, you know, we do recommend doing this by case by case. I think the last example is great. If you're a home health worker, there are agencies that are doing testing, routine testing, right? As myself, as a physician, as a pediatrician, as someone in the ER doc, if I am getting exposed, if I'm exposed to a patient that's positive, I monitor symptoms myself if I get any. And then if I do, you know, I will actually do a rapid testing. So every instance is important. So we definitely encourage those who are either at risk or around somebody who's at risk to talk about that directly with your physician or your provider about what you should do if you've come into contact with someone, should you get tested. And we always, always recommend, once you know that you've been around someone that's positive, is to self-quarantine for 7 to 14 days to make sure that symptoms are not coming. Those are great questions to then dialogue with your physician, your provider, to make sure that you're going through that scenario and doing best steps for you, but for those that are also around you as well. And then, caller, if you could remind me of the last, of your first question. I wanted to go in reverse order.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think we actually lost our caller.
Did she drop?
Okay. Did she drop? Okay.
I think she did, yeah.
Okay. It's a great question. I wanted to make sure I went in that order just to start with the vaccine education. If any of the panelists recall that first question, we can answer
that
as she comes back on.
The first question was about whether the vaccine was going to be mandatory, and it is presently not mandatory, and it cannot be made mandatory as long as it's under an emergency use authorization with the FDA. Eventually, some employers might mandate this vaccine, but that's way down the line.
So we're not there yet, and hopefully we're not going to get there. Hopefully the compliance will be so significant that that won't have to be an option. Thank you, doctors. Thank you very much. Brittany, who you have for our next call?
All right. Next, we have Patricia calling from Swampoodle.
Hi.
Hey, Patricia.
How are you, Senator?
I'm doing fine.
Great, great, great. My question is, I'm 75. Mm-hmm. Today on TV, I've seen they had like tiers, different tiers of age groups that they were going to be the next people that got the vaccine. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to know, is it going to be available at my doctor's office, my pharmacy, or like an on-site facility?
Okay, like the Rite Aid or the CVS or something like that.
Yeah, Rite Aid, CVS,
okay.
Or maybe
the health center,
I don't know,
or
school, or
yep. Good question.
Yeah.
Good question. And Patricia, Brittany wanted to know if where was Swampoodle? So
Swampoodle,
North
Philly, down from Cuyahoga, off of Lehigh.
We
Indiana
got it.
Avenue. We got it straight.
We got it straight.
All right. That's the old way, Swampoodle. I'm originally from Tioga, across Allegheny Avenue.
There you go.
But anyway, that's another thing. But anyway, let's get back.
Okay, Dr. Johnson, what do you think here?
Yeah, that's really a very important point, is how we create the access point. When we do have all of the vaccine, how do we create availability for you? And we are trying to make this vaccine available at many sites across the city and in all different zip codes and census tracts. We want as many access points as possible. I think that our best approach is to work with the pharmacies, which is something that we're doing. We know that there are 500-some pharmacies in this city. They're spread everywhere, and we plan to get vaccines into all of these pharmacies when we have the available supplies. So that is going to be a good place for you to go. We would also like to get vaccines into the hands of many medical providers in the city, because ultimately they're the ones who are going to reach the entire population. But one of the problems that we have right now is the difficulty in handling and storing and shipping the current products that we have. One of the products, of course, requires this extra cold storage. That means we can't ship it to private offices. The other product doesn't require ultra-cold storage, but has to be shipped in large quantities, meaning over 100 doses, so we can't ship a private doctor a dozen doses for his or her particular patients. So we've got a little bit of problem about creating access out of primary care type of offices. So I think that for people who need to be vaccinated in the early phases, like you would. I think pharmacies are a major point of access. I think we're going to have vaccine in many of the clinics, which means some of our federally qualified clinics, the health department's own district health centers, and there will be some freestanding clinics that are set up just to administer this vaccine. But I do want to point out one thing about the getting access to the vaccine is it will all be appointment-based. So we are not going to encourage people to stand in lines or walk in unannounced because of the need to maintain social distancing and masking. So even when we're working with pharmacies and clinics, all of the access points are going to be appointment-based, and we'll get information on the website about how to call and make appointments or who you can contact to get assistance with that.
Thank you.
Dr. Arkush, up in Montgomery County, what's your assessment on that?
So we're facing all the same challenges about the shipping and the storage that mm-hmm. you just heard so very clearly described. And in Montgomery County, we are planning to set up probably at least 8 sites around the county where people will be able to either drive to or walk up to get their vaccine. And they will also be appointment-based for all the same reasons. We don't want people standing around for long periods of time.
That's right.
And as soon as we've got enough vaccine to start doing that, then we will start announcing that and just putting it out, social media and all kinds of public ways. That'll probably be the first place where most people will be able to get their vaccine because of the somewhat complicated shipping and storage issues around this. It's going to be a little tricky to send them to doctor's offices, at least in these early days.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pat.
This is Dr.
Right.
Fauci. And just if I can add to that, this is Dr. Fauci. Just for anyone who is listening, you know, we can provide a lot of great information. And I think hearing the perspective from our health department officials is great because they are going to be doing a lot more widespread vaccine distribution. You know, as being in the clinic almost every day, I still encourage everyone, call your office. That's why we're here. Let them know that you're interested in getting the vaccine. They can start to look at numbers that way. I know offices, so even as a pediatrician, I'm educating parents and grandparents. Let them know you're interested so they can consider the amount for distribution. They may also be able to provide you where the closest site will be where you can get an appointment. So I think the more that providers know which of their patient panels want to get the vaccine, that's also going to help them engage with those in this process. So please make that phone call, talk to the nurse, talk to the clinical manager, and they'll be able to give you some information about what your practice is specifically doing and where to best guide you.
Great. Thanks, Pat. All right, Brittany, who
okay,
you got next?
Let's go to Robin, who's calling from North Philly.
Oh, you like North Philly. I see you there, Brittany. Okay.
I'm getting familiar now.
Hey, Robin.
Hi, how are you?
All righty, what you got for it? I got 3 of the best on the line. Who you? What you got for them?
Okay, I got a little bit for everybody.
Okay.
I have children on the front line in Abington Hospital of all. And
okay.
I don't know if you know about Abington Hospital. It's one of the worst 3 in the country. Okay, and my daughters have asthma, and their children have asthma. And I know you're saying you really don't want to give it to kids under 16, but their kids are under 16, and they're under the same household. Are they going to be allowed to get this vaccine? Because my daughters are getting the vaccine.
Okay, all right. I'm going to give it to the doctors. Let them jump in on this one.
Yeah, so this is Val Arkush. Let me just jump in on Abington Hospital. It is, I think when you said it's one of the worst, you meant in terms of having the most patients in the ICU?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, good. Just wanted to make sure we were on the same page. It's a great hospital, but they are really, really full with COVID
yes.
patients. So I'm really glad to hear that your daughters are getting their vaccine there through the hospital. At this point, if the children are under 16, right now it just is literally not approved. And the
but they're
is,
all my daughter's asthmatic. Her daughters are asthmatic, and they're 15 years old. and she's got to come home to these kids. So I don't understand why you won't give it to the kids, because my daughter can come home with it and pass it on to my granddaughter. That sounds crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a pediatrician, if I can jump in, the pediatrician. And I love the advocacy that you have for your children and your grandchildren. That's certainly appropriate. You certainly want to be mindful, as we're talking about vaccines and safety, right? And all the trials have been done in adults. So we know how it works in adults. We want to be mindful that children are not small adults. Their bodies work a little bit differently, even from an immune system standpoint. So we want to make sure that once we see how it's working in our adults, then we can start to have a lot more studies to make sure that it's going to be safe in children. Now, the benefit of the vaccine, it sounds like, again, your daughter is getting the vaccine as a frontline worker, healthcare worker. That's what's great about the vaccine, is if one person gets immunized and get that vaccine, that protects them from catching the virus, but also spreading it to those in the household, right? So we know, and I may use this term, you guys are an educated audience, you may want to look it up, like herd immunity in that regard. So even as we slowly increase the number of those that are getting vaccines, that's going to decrease the spread to our community. So one person in the household, two people, three people that are eligible, that is even equally important as a start to minimize that spread. So I would encourage those that are eligible in the household to get it, but then those that are 16 and under, those that have asthma, I see children with asthma all the time, the three W's, still wear a mask, still wait an appropriate distance, and wash your hands, because it'd be the same as with flu or any of our common cold viruses. So safety is the most important thing in this regard, and understanding that the vaccine, right, is a dual effect, protecting one person and protecting the community as well. So once we see how this works, then we'll do more studies, and then I certainly guarantee, right, as a pediatrician, I will be the first to make sure that our children are able to get it when it's right.
Dr. Posse, that's some very good information. Let me ask, I think, what's probably the natural follow-up, which is, when do we think there may be, and this we'll start with you, Dr. Posse, but obviously it goes to everyone, when do you think there may be enough information in that might give us some handle on the issue of children and getting children the vaccine? I assume that there's still a lot of data that's being collected with respect to how the vaccine is going out right now. When could that possibly be?
Yeah, great question. The American Academy of Pediatrics, right, which is the organizing body for pediatricians, I'm a member and leader of that as well. We are already advocating to include children, primarily 13 to 16, in more clinical trials. So that would be the first start. We are already advocating, right, because we want to make sure how this responds in children. And so it would be the same process as we've done with the adults, right, is once the children are in the trials, we can see the safety and monitor and determine the appropriate dose of the vaccine. So we're hoping that by spring or summer of 2021, that these new trials will start to include children and then go from there. And that's usually how vaccine or even, you know, medication trials will start. We start with adults, and then we're able to identify the dose, look at the data, and then translate that to the children. It's important to know, again, children are not small adults, and they do need to be monitored in a different way for safety. But that's why we are really advocating, right, for our adults now to get that vaccine, because still protecting both themselves and the children in the household.
Great. Thank you. I don't know, Dr. Johnson, Dr. Arquist, do you want to respond to the children thing? I think Dr. Posse has covered it, but if you wanted to add anything here, that'd be good.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to add. I think, you know, obviously she's got it all exactly right, and I know it's frustrating, but children are not just mini adults. Now, they really do have things different about how their bodies work, and so we want to respect them and their health and wait just a little bit longer to get some more information to make sure that it is safe in younger children. But if the moms are vaccinated, and they take all, you know, you take Dr. Posse's advice and keep the mask going and some social distancing and those hands clean, the kids should be really protected.
Got it. Okay. Great. Thank you. Thank you. Brittany, who's next? Brittany?
All right. We've got Carolyn calling from University City.
All right. Carolyn, how are you?
I'm good, Senator. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. What you got for us tonight?
I've got a question for you. Like I was explaining to the young lady,
mm-hmm.
they have different things in the remedy. And the thing about it is, I'm extremely allergic to iodine.
Okay.
And so I can't take, you know, do you know if both vaccines have iodine in them, where I'll be able to take one, but the one that's out now by Pfizer, it has iodine in it. I can't take it.
Okay.
And I would love to take it, but it would do me no good.
Okay. All right. We'll start with Dr. Johnson. Dr. Johnson, you have anything for Carolyn?
Yeah, I do. Yep. This is a very important issue, and the issue that you raise is this serious allergic reaction that has been observed in recipients of the Pfizer vaccine, and
mm-hmm.
the caution that has come out is that we are being instructed to screen all intended recipients of the vaccine for a serious allergic reaction to any injectable medication or treatment, exactly as you just stated, iodine would qualify under that. Now, from what I understand, this allergic reaction to date has been linked with the Pfizer vaccine, but
mm-hmm.
remember, Moderna has not been released for use yet, so we don't have much experience in of seeing what's going to happen with the release, which is going on right now. So the CDC made the decision that they are going to extend that caution on administering either of these vaccines to people with serious allergic reactions to injectable medications. So right now they're saying that even if it's Moderna vaccine, we should not be vaccinating you because of your special allergic history. Now, I do believe that that will change, because what will happen in the next week or two, we're going to start seeing a lot of Moderna product released and administered, and we're going to know if these allergic reactions happen. So, and I don't know if y'all are aware of something called V-Safe, V as in victory, dash safe. It's this new monitoring. It's an app you put on your phone, and it monitors, allows you to report adverse events into the CDC after receiving the vaccine. And we've already looked at the data for all of the Pfizer vaccine that was sent out last week, and we know how many allergic reactions happen. And that's going to happen with the Moderna vaccine. So within a week or two, we're going to know if these allergic reactions also cross over to that product. So I would say that right now we are being told not to give someone like you this vaccine, but I do think in the next few weeks, as there is more and more data collected about what may have caused the allergies, we may be able to carve out some of the specific vaccine products that you would be eligible to take. So I would just say give it a little bit of time, and I think we'll be able to vaccinate you at some point in the future.
Well, let me ask a question, and thanks, Carolyn. Don't hang up. Let me ask a question, Dr. Johnson, or any of our other doctors, Dr. Arkush, Dr. Posse. Are there any other? We've got the Pfizer vaccine. We've got the Moderna vaccine. Are there
mm-hmm.
any other vaccines that are scheduled to come out, or any others in production that might hit the market soon that might provide another alternative? Do we know of anything?
So there is a Johnson & Johnson vaccine that is in phase 3 clinical trials. It is a completely different type of product. It is, I'll say, it's a little more like a conventional flu shot
mm-hmm.
in the way that it's made, whereas the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine are what we call mRNA vaccines. This Johnson & Johnson is a different type of vaccine. And that one has progressed in these, in what we call sort of the late stage trials or the phase three trials. But I understand it may not be as effective as the other two vaccines. And so now they're restudying it after giving second doses. So I was expecting this to come out in the end of January. I'm thinking now it may be pushed back a bit while they do some additional studies. So I can't shed any more light except that.
Okay. All right. So Carolyn, there, as the science continues and the research continues, the work continues. Just like with other diseases, illnesses, infections, the medicine evolves over time, and given the pervasiveness of this pandemic, there may be other options that come down the line as the scientists and the pharmacists, the folks who are just really, hammering it out, doing all the studying, doing all the research, continue to work on improved products to make sure that as many people as possible get the vaccine. But that's a great question, Carolyn. Appreciate you asking. All right?
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. Thank you. Brittany, who's next?
Next, we have Carol in Winfield Heights.
All right, Carol, how are you?
I'm fine, doctor. I mean, Senator.
Not me.
Senator, and I wanted to thank you for this session. It's very, very educational.
Great.
Really
very
appreciate
good.
It.
Very good. Thank you.
My question is this. I've heard on the news in the last few days that the present virus has mutated and has become slightly different. I'm wondering if these vaccines are just going to be just as effective against the new strain of virus.
Well, this is Val. I can jump in on that.
Okay.
So this is all very new information, even for all of us on this phone. What it does seem is that this mutation is making the virus more contagious, meaning that it's just easier to spread from person to person. From what I've seen today from some of the scientists that have been involved in some of this work, the belief is that while this mutation may be make the virus a little more contagious, it shouldn't affect the way the vaccine works or the effectiveness of the vaccine. So it's not unusual that viruses they're called mutations. There are these slight changes in their DNA over time or RNA over time. And just like the flu, every year we get a slightly different flu vaccine than the year before. But those mutations take time to really impact how the virus works. And as a consequence, the vaccine that we have, it's believed, should be as effective as it's been in the studies so far. Now, we won't know that with 100% certainty until a little bit more time goes by. But hopefully that will be the case.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Carol. Appreciate you. Take care. Brittany, who's next?
All right, let's go to Jackie in West Philly.
Hey, hello, Jackie.
Hello, Senator Hughes.
How you doing?
You know me very well. I live in the Haddon setting. And every time you have an activity going on, I'm not the first one that signs up for it, but definitely the third or fourth. But you know me very well.
Absolutely.
Very well.
Thank you so much.
My question is the conflict on the number of days for quarantine. I work for the government, and they have put my coworkers on 14 days quarantine. But when I read CDC website, it says 10 days. So I'm confused. What is the maximum days for quarantine?
Any of our doctors can jump in on that one.
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in on. This is Val Arkush. So that has been a very confusing situation because the CDC has changed their guidance recently. So it's caused a lot of confusion. So if you've been exposed to the virus and it was a single or one-time exposure, in other words, you're not living in your household with somebody who has the virus, so you don't have an ongoing exposure to the virus, the maximum number of days that it's recommended to quarantine is 14 days. If you haven't become ill or had symptoms of the virus after 14 days of a single exposure, then you're out of the woods. You're not going to get the virus. But 14 days is a really long time for people to quarantine. And a lot of people just aren't able to do that because of their job situation or other situation. So the CDC investigated whether or not it might be safe to shorten the quarantine period. And what advice they came out with recently was that if you've been able to get a test 5 days after you were exposed, and that test is negative, then on the eighth day, you can come out of quarantine. That's assuming that you've not had any symptoms during that 7 day period. And similarly, if you can't get a test, but 10 days go by and you haven't had any symptoms, then it's okay for you to leave quarantine. There's still a very small chance that you might become ill, but it's very tiny. It's like down in the 1% range. And if it's easier for somebody to comply with the quarantine by only doing it for 10 days, then the risk is so small that it's felt that it's okay to leave quarantine. Now, some employers, though, are still requiring the 14 days because that brings the risk almost down to zero.
Okay, there you go. That's good information. Thank you, Dr. Arkush. Thank you very much. Thanks, Jackie, for your call as well. Brittany, who's next? We're running out of minutes here, but we're going to keep powering through this. Who you got next, Brittany?
Absolutely. Let's go to John in West Philly.
Okay. Hey, John.
Yes. I worked at Pennsylvania School for the Deaf back in the 70s when it was located at 7500 Germantown Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
I was chief of security there, so I had to learn something about the history of the school. So my question is, has pregnant women, and that goes back to Rebecca.
You dropped out a little bit, John. Try it again. John? Ooh, it sounds like a bad connection.
I think I heard the question about, okay, this is Dr. Posse. It's a great question to ask or answer if that was not a specific question about pregnant women. So I guess women that are expecting and even women that are breastfeeding. So this is Dr. Posse, pediatrician. I'll answer that. So we are encouraging women that are pregnant, women that are breastfeeding to get the vaccine. I've had colleagues, physician colleagues who've already received it, which is fantastic. They were not included in the trials, though like other vaccines and medications, we are encouraging them to do that. And I think what's great is when they get the vaccine, they're able to pass along to like passive immunity to the child that they deliver, and then also having that immunity in the household as well for any other children. So it is encouraging and it is safe for now for women that are expecting and women that are breastfeeding. I want to keep emphasizing the breastfeeding to get the vaccine. And there are reports and data out there of women that have already done so, and they're being monitored.
Let me ask this question, Dr. Posse and Dr. Arkush and Dr. Johnson. Have the three of you had the have you all received the vaccine?
I'll start. This is Dr. Posse. I am scheduled early January, and the reason why is because we are going in order similar to the distribution of those that are greatest risk. So as a general pediatrician that's in the community, I am not as close contact as my colleagues that are in the ICU. That are in the inpatient setting or in the ER. So that will be my New Year's gift or late Christmas gift to myself.
Getting
the vaccine.
I'm interested for allowing our listeners to hear about any side effects or anything like that you may have had. So you'll tell us your side effects when we get you back in on sometime in January.
Absolutely. And they can follow me. I probably will track it on my social media as well. I think it's another way to engage the community.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Dr. Arkush Val, have you got yours yet? Have you gotten it yet?
Not yet. I am currently not taking care of patients, and so
I've got
a lot of county employees that are much more out in front of me. But once my turn comes up, I will do it publicly and, hope that that's helpful to others.
Very good. Very good. Very good. Dr. Johnson, and yourself?
Okay, so I'll be the outlier here. I was immunized on Friday. I am working in the clinics now, and I have a lot of shots, vaccines to other people, and I got one myself.
Uh-huh.
And for me, I mean, everybody's experience, of course, is different. I had a little bit of a sore arm for maybe 12, 15 hours and nothing else.
Uh-huh.
And I would say, for our experience of giving it in the clinic I'm working at, we've had, I would say most people complain a little bit about sore arm afterwards, but we're not hearing anything else notable. Now, it is, it's sort of described in, I'll say, the package inserts or the information we get about the vaccines, that individuals who are vaccinated should expect some symptoms the next day, that it's not uncommon to have the sore arm, maybe even a little tiredness or achiness or ache, even low-grade fever. So that is reported. And my peers tell me that I'm not supposed to call those side effects. I'm supposed to say that those are signs that it's working, which is really what that means is your body is reacting to this vaccine and building immunity. So even though you may have an achy arm the next day, you have to look at it with a positive light because it's a good sign.
That's the point. I remember, these things evolve over time, right? These medicines, like all medicines, evolve over time. They get better. They're more direct. They're really there to help. And I remember, oh goodness, we won't say how many years ago when I was young and you had to get your vaccine and it might have hurt the sore arm for a little bit, but next thing you know, it was all gone, and you just kept moving forward. We're pretty much out of time. I do want to ask a question about and we may be too early in this conversation, but I see Pam has asked a question about we're hoping to make sure that there's a lot of compliance and a lot of folks get the vaccine and study the research and study the information and, of course, still do the appropriate social distancing and wear the mask and anything like that. Have we thought at all about on the issue of compliance, about what it means if some folks choose not to get the vaccine, they're not confident, and how are we going to educate people about why this is important and why this is necessary to get as much compliance as possible? And that's broad to everybody, and Brittany, we'll wind up right after this.
Well, this is Val Arkush. I'll start, but I think, it'd be great to hear everyone's perspective on this call. I think that it's really important that everyone put this into context of, well, what if I get COVID-19? What if I catch the coronavirus? And the reason there's been such an incredible effort to put to developing a safe and effective vaccine as quickly as possible is because this virus is a very dangerous virus. In Montgomery County, we've had well over 900 people die from this virus. In our country, we are now having on many days more people die than died on 9/11. And so this is a very, very serious virus and one that can not only cause death, but in some number of people, and again, we don't quite have all the information on this yet, in some number of people, it seems to be causing conditions that are persistent, that are chronic, that are lasting for weeks to months after the person is infected. So I think it's always really important to think about the risk and the benefit. And there's definitely risk from not getting vaccinated. And hopefully people will take the time to get educated, get all their questions answered, and be comfortable that the risk from the vaccine is very low for them and that there's a lot of benefit to them from being vaccinated.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Val. Anyone else want to respond?
Yeah, this is Dr. Posse. I think it's a really important aspect to consider, and we call it vaccine hesitancy, right? Why might I be hesitant? And I think a lot of times it does come around understanding, and I want to use that word education, and making sure that you're getting the right information. You know, we started at the top of the call, right? Trusted messages from trusted messengers. You know, if you have questions, right, going to Instagram or just Googling information, you're likely going to get a lot of different commentary data that's not accurate, right? And so where do you start? You know, start with your physician, start with your provider, go to the health department website. All that information is going to be accurate. I think also it's important, like for myself, right, as an African-American woman and physician, right, it's important that you all see someone that looks like yourself, right? So I want people who look like me to know that I have a lot of trust in the science and the vaccine as well. So I think that is on our health system, right, to provide the right education, also on our listeners and our community members, right, to make sure they're going to the right source to get that information and education. I think similarly with vaccines that we give in children, right, adults should also educate themselves on the vaccine that will be for themselves. And then to echo, right, you know, it's a decision of not getting the vaccine because you don't have the information versus actually getting COVID-19 and then having to deal with the health and side effects of that. So at the crux of that, you know, all of you that have joined today clearly want to get educated, and that's great. And then I encourage you to inform those as well about the safety and importance of vaccines, but mostly going to a trusted messenger in your community that will give you the right information.
Thank you, Dr. Posse. That's really, really good stuff. And you can use my phrase as much as you want. Trusted messengers delivering trusted messages. Dr. Johnson, any closing comments on that issue or any of the overall issues? And then I want everybody to make sure they get their contact information and their websites out.
No, I agree with everything that's been said. I think that having these trusted messengers and influencers is really going to be key, and that we hear all of the time, you know, well, if so-and-so takes the shot, I will take the shot. And we've learned that, you know, some certain individual, a lot of times it might be, you know, a minister in a church, or it could be their own doctor, or, you know, could be a sports figure, who knows who it is. But, you know, the fact that they're willing to take vaccine can really influence large numbers of people. So we are hoping that as people get vaccinated, they will announce it and try to encourage other people to be vaccinated, because we know that we need to get a large proportion of the population vaccinated to end the pandemic.
Great, great, great. Thank you, Dr. Johnson. That was Dr. Carolyn Johnson, the Deputy Health Commissioner for the City of Philadelphia. Dr. Johnson, is there a great website that you want folks to go to, folks to access, to keep them posted on all the good developments that are happening in this space?
So it's the phila.gov/COVID, and there is a vaccines tab. All of the COVID information is on that one website, and there is the tab where you can go specifically to vaccine info.
Very good. Thank you very much. Dr. Val Arkush, the chair of the Montgomery County Commissioners, thanks for joining us. Any good information you want to make sure that everybody has access to?
Yes. In Monco, we also have a website and all of the vaccine, as well as all kinds of other information, like how to make an appointment for a test, all that is at montcopa.org/COVID-1 9. So mocopa.org/COVID-19.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Val. Appreciate you again getting on with us. Dr. Priscilla Plassey from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, what's that good information that you want everybody to have?
Absolutely. So I'm actually going to send you all to the website for the National Medical Association.
Okay, great.
NMANET.org. You will get up-to-date information on how communities of color are being included in trials and education to, again, I would say, regain the trust of the health system. It's fantastic. NMANET.org. And then I also would redirect you again to Senator Hughes' website. I think there's a lot of great information for the community, for residents, for the state of Pennsylvania. I'm sure more information about town halls. And then if you ever want to just hear what I'm thinking, you know, not just the pediatric health, but community and minority health in general, you can find me on my Twitter, at Priscilla Posse. Those are all my social media handles. And I dialogue with a lot of our health leaders and elected officials in Pennsylvania about health equity.
Great, great. Thank you, Dr. Posse. Thank you for always being available to help us get that good information out. We really, really, really appreciate you. Dr. Val Arkush from Monco, appreciate you always again being available. Dr. Carolyn Johnson, thank you so very much for always being available. We're going to arrange to have this conversation posted on our website so that anyone can come back and listen to it. Because so many great questions were asked and so many great answers were provided. So we're going to try to make that happen. So when that gets done, we'll send out a message to everybody so they can spread it along and get this information out. Again, trusted messengers delivering trusted messages, and that's what we're trying to always be about here whenever we do our town halls. Brittany, I know I'm supposed to make sure everybody knows my website, senatorhughes.com. I know I'm supposed to tell everybody to call 215-879-7777 if they've got any questions. We know that there's a lot of questions that have been posted that the time just did not allow us to get to. We'll try to get to all of them over the next couple of days. I know I'm supposed to tell everybody to be safe. I know I'm supposed to tell everybody to wear their mask. I know I'm supposed to tell everybody to stay home and be social distance. Is there anything else you need me to tell everybody, Brittany, before we sign off?
No, I think you got it all. You hardly even need me, Senator. I want to thank everyone again for participating, and you've been a wonderful audience. Thank you for sharing your evening with us.
Thanks, everybody. Be well. Be safe. Take care.